My name is Allie, and welcome to Funny Fat Friend, a podcast about this bodacious biracial babe trying to find herself in film. It has been over a year since the murder of Breonna Taylor. Here in Louisville, we are still seeking justice, not only for Louisville residents, but Black people in the United States as a whole. You can give to bail fund organizations throughout the country, including the Louisville Bail Fund. And also, if you're a Kentuckian, please contact your legislators and get informed about what is happening right now in the General Assembly. There are a lot of anti-trans and racist-ass bills that are being pushed through, and we got to do something about it. You can find the phone number to call down in the description for this podcast, as well as some resources on bill trackers so you can get up to date on what's going on. All right, so Oscars, we're doing it. You can probably tell based on the title of this episode what we're talking about. We're going to be talking about this year's nominated Best Animated Features. You can also tell something different if you are a patron of my and Sarah's Patreon, patreon.com/could be worse. Then I'm recording a video version of this podcast today. So if you are interested in a video of this podcast being recorded, come on down to the Patreon. All right, excellent. We'll see how this works. Let me know if you're a patron listening right now or watching right now. If you're into it, and if you're not, then it'll never happen again, and that'll be fine. All right, great. So, animated features. This year, there are five. It's typical. But to no one's surprise, three out of the five nominated Best Pictures were produced by Disney, right? Of course. Two of them are like blatantly like Walt Disney productions, and the third is Pixar, which is owned by Disney. So still, Disney. You know. But they're actually quite diverse in actual content and story, so that's pretty dope. So I'll give them like small props. The smallest of props. Like this big of props. And for those listening, my fingers are very close together right now, so it's quite low. Quite low? Dope. All right, so let's talk about them all. Let's talk about all five. The five nominated animated features are Encanto, Flea, Luca, The Mitchells vs. the Machines, and Raya the Last Dragon. The first nominated feature that we're going to talk about is Encanto. And Matilda has now gotten on the bed and will probably make noise at some point. What a treat. And she shakes the bed so much every time. So, yeah. Behind the curtain, I record this often, just sitting next to my bed, using it as a desk. Even though I now have a nice desk, you know, we like what we like in this world. All right, let's talk about Encanto, which is definitely the film that everybody wants me to talk about the most. It's the most popular film on the list. It is Disney. Super easy. I'm going to do like little bitty film synopses for all of the films because they are so new. I'm not going to do my like hella in-depth fucking second by second summary of the films because I want people to not be spoiled at all and still, you know, get to watch it with fresh eyes. So yeah, they're going to be really short, little sweet, full of mystery and intrigue. Okay, Encanto. The film synopsis is, the amazing family Madrigal has been blessed with a magic gift unique to each person, except for young Mirabel, the only ordinary member. When their enchanted home in Colombia, known as Encanto, is threatened, it turns out that Mirabel may be the family's only hope. Intriguing, yes. Yeah, Okay, so it was directed by Byron Howard and Jared Bush, who co-directed Zootopia together, which is bomb. It was really good. I really enjoyed Zootopia. Did it win? I should have looked that up. I feel like it probably did. Maybe it didn't. Was it up against Spider-Verse? I think it might have been up against Spider-Verse and Spider-Verse 1, and it should have, so. Okay, cool. Anyway, Howard had directed several Disney productions, like Bolt. Remember that? Is that the Miley Cyrus one? I think it is. Where Miley Cyrus, well, she's not like literally. So she voice acts in it, and it's about a dog that thinks it's a superhero because they're like in a movie where he's a superhero. It was a cute idea. Wait, is it John Travolta voices the dog? Is this all in my head? Did I watch this movie? I don't think I watched this movie. I think I started to watch it one time. Y'all... You know how it be. Anyway, yeah, so Byron Howard, one of the co-directors, he had directed Bolt and Tangled, classic. Bush. The other guy was named Bush, Jared Bush. He wrote Moana, which is how we famously got Lin-Manuel Miranda involved in this film. Encanto, he is involved, but of course there's music, so he's our favorite music guy. Yeah, so the three of them, Byron Howard, Jared Bush, and Lin-Manuel Miranda, plus three more people, Charisse Castro Smith, Jason Hand, and Nancy Cruz, they wrote the story for Encanto, all six of them together. A real creative powerhouse. I've learned, like, kind of with Disney, for most of the Disney, it's a whole lot of people go into writing, and I think that's really cool. I think that can be really creative and fun. I'm working right now on a very small production, and we are a team of writers of, I think there are six of us, and it is really fun and helpful to have more than one voice. And yeah, cool. All right. Disney cast several actors with Colombian heritage, including Stephanie Beatriz, whose father is Colombian, John Leguizamo, who was born in Bogota, and Wilmer Valderrama. We haven't talked about him in a minute, right? What a treat. Who spent his childhood in Colombia, where his mother is from. We also have some very special guests of Maluma, who is a Colombian mega superstar that I think, like, is just gonna take over. I think this is the era of Maluma. Have you seen Marry Me? I know that's not an Oscar-nominated film, surprise. Well, maybe it will be next year, because it only came out in February of this year. One of those songs could get nominated next year. Anyway, it's that rom-com with Jennifer Lopez and Owen Wilson and Maluma. I saw it in the theater. I loved it. I'll watch it again. It's super fun. Recommend. Maybe I'll do a podcast about it down the line. I want people to be able to see it before I do it. So yeah, Maluma is in it in a very small role. And then Adasa, who is like a bonkers talented reggaeton artist, she is also in it. And so yeah, the casting was super inclusive and awesome. We love to see it. And then I had to throw in, Alan Tudyk is also technically in this cast. He plays a parrot. And it's just excellent. Great, cool. Jermaine Franco co-composed all the songs for Coco previously, and he scored Encanto. So that's pretty nice. Disney really likes to keep it in family. The music is definitely the greatest standout for this film, outside, of course, the cultural representation. Fucking, that's what we love to see most, everyone. The track We Don't Talk About Bruno was a viral sensation. It broke various records and became one of Disney's most successful songs of all time. I literally heard it on the radio the other day. It topped the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and the U.K. Singles Chart, and it marked Disney's first number one song on the former in the 21st century. And it's the first to ever be on the UK Top 100. But sure. Okay, so it's time to be real. I really enjoy Encanto, so like let's not come for me yet. I think it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I'd watch it probably again. It's gonna take some time though. So like, I thought it was sweet. I expected to cry because I always expect to cry if it's a Disney film. But I didn't, which was a bit shocking. I think I cried right away. I think that's pretty normal. I cried pretty much right at the beginning, and then I didn't cry again. But that's atypical for me. I usually cry multiple times. I think the only like Disney that I haven't cried was like Toy Story, which is technically Pixar, but Toy Story 4. That movie was ass. It shouldn't have been nominated for anything last year, whatever. Great. The biggest thing about this movie that confuses me and is kind of like who the intended audience was, beyond like Colombians and people of color, and like who, and because that's too broad, you know, that's like very broad. But maybe that's fine. You all let me know if that's okay. But it like was meant to be very much like a family friendly film. I think it technically is that. But I don't think if I was a kid that I'd understand very much of what was going on. And the family dynamics were odd of Mirabelle was supposed to be like 15 years old, but was definitely 30. Like, but that I think that's like what they were going. What's that? No, that wasn't. She's so childish a lot of the time, but then also acts like a 30-year-old. It wasn't consistent. Her character to me wasn't very consistent of like, why anything was happening, why she didn't, yeah. I think it needed to be clearer, and she just wasn't a phenomenal, well-rounded character, and she definitely deserved to be, I think. Yeah, that's how I feel. There it is, clearly. She deserved to be better written than she was. I also, like, re-listened to several of the songs while I was, like, writing up my guide for this episode, and I couldn't remember any of them. Like, I couldn't remember how any of them... I remember watching the Pressure song and enjoying it while watching it, but once the film was over, I could not hum or sing any of them to you. Like, I couldn't remember the choruses to any of them. But obviously, I'm, like, the exception because, you know, it's literally playing on the radio. That Bruno song. I know I could go, no, 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 no. I remember that being in that song, but I can't remember how any of the rest of it goes. So, the songs weren't very impactful to me, but they are to other people, so... I'm wrong, but this is my podcast and I get to say how I feel. Great. In short, in long, really, in long, I love how much this film is loved. Like, that's my ultimate takeaway. I love how much this film is loved because it does deserve to be loved. It's just, like, didn't hit for me, and that's totally fine. Because... I don't know who really the audience was, but it wasn't me, so we at least figured that out. But that's dope. Yeah, you can see the impact of this film. People being represented for the first time. Hell, fuck yeah. That's literally what I'm all about. That's the whole podcast. So we love that. We love that the most. And so, yeah, Encanto, two thumbs up for that alone. And then also it's super fun to watch. And yeah, makes complete sense why it was nominated. It completely deserves its nomination in this category. Q. It's also nominated for Best Original Song. I don't remember. It's a song that starts with O. And I already told you all that I didn't remember the songs. But it was one that a lot of people were surprised that it was the one they picked to put in for their bid for the nomination, as opposed to one of the more pop songs. But I think it's because it's more of like a, authentic's not the word, but I think it's one of the more like complex and lovely songs, rather than just like the earworm bops. But I don't know. What's the merit in saying one of those is better than the other? Because there's not. Yeah, I think whatever. Whatever, cool. I don't know if it'll win original song. It might. Maybe we'll talk about those in the next episode. I don't know. I haven't figured these out yet. Y'all shouldn't be shocked. I don't figure shit out. Okay, cool. Encanto! That was Encanto! Let's move forward! Moving forward. Cool. Second nominated film that we will be discussing is Flea. I'm going to have a really hard time. I wrote the pronunciations out for these names, but I will probably still get them incorrect. They deserve to have their names said correctly, and I apologize. And yeah, look them up and you do it right. And show me the fuck up. Teach me. Make me feel bad. Okay, Okay, Flea. it was created by Jonas Poyer Rasmussen, Monica Hellstrom, Signe Rieg. It's one of those. It's like the Schurnsen and Charlotte de la Gornieri. I think I did it. Someone's gonna tell me I didn't, but that's fine. If I got it wrong, I got it wrong, and I apologize. Okay, cool. Film synopsis. Desperate to protect his identity, but also needing to unburden himself, Danish resident Amin opens up about his past as a child refugee from Afghanistan. He looks back over his life as he grapples with a secret that's kept him hidden for 20 years, one that's threatened to derail the life he's built for himself and his future husband. Isn't that, don't you want to watch that? Don't you want to watch that now? I did a good job. Don't you want to watch it? Yeah. Flea is the first documentary to be nominated for animated feature film. And the first animated film to be nominated for documentary feature. So yeah, it's pretty sick. It's also the first Danish film to be in the international film category, which is also wild, but you know, we're doing new things every day, and that's great, and we need to keep doing new things every day. All right, a bit about Flea. It's one of the shortest films on, I think it is just the shortest film. It's like a little over an hour. It's technically, I think, an hour and a half with all the credits and things like that, but yeah, it's a little over an hour long. It's a very, like, yeah, succinct watch, so if you don't have a ton of time, don't worry about it. It's worthwhile. And it uses its time very well. It won the Sundance World Cinema Documentary Competition, as well as tons of nominations and awards from film festivals and critic groups around the world. It's the only one that even like went to like festivals and things like that, because the others are Disney movies. And the other one that isn't a Disney movie is a Sony movie. So, yeah, it's really exciting to see a small film make it with the big titans. I don't know what's happening out. In case you can hear on the audio, just like clanging and motors and things, it's the first nice week of weather. Therefore, I guess everyone hired landscaping people to come explode the street. I don't know. But good for them. Get their work. But yeah, if you hear weird noises in the background, it's either that or Matilda doing something annoying. So we apologize. Great. Back to Flea. Yeah, we love to see it. This is, yeah, just a small filmmaker and his friend that he interviewed. And it's just, it's very authentic and super interesting. I love it a lot. Yeah. I think the animation in this film adds, like, an incredible creative and powerful element to the storytelling. It's very clever, the choice of it, to protect Amon's identity, because his story getting at, like, his identity and the story in combination could change his entire, like, it could ruin his life if it came out. There are legal ramifications for him speaking, which is a privilege that a lot of us have, right, is that we have freedom of speech, and we have a life in which telling the truth of ourselves isn't going to get us taken away and ripped away from our home. So that is something to be very grateful for. But yeah, it's extremely clever choice, and I love the filmmakers for it. But just to be, like, super blunt, I think it could have gone further. Like, the style and the commitment-wise to the animation, I think definitely could have gone further. They used it very baseline, kind of, as the, like, here's a clever way for us to protect his identity. And then that was kind of it. Every once in a while, you would get, like, a difference in animation, like, as he was talking about emotional things, like, telling emotional parts of the story, there would be a slight change in animation style, more of, like, moving to, like, outlines, like a dreamlike sort of thing, where there aren't very many details in the drawings themselves, but we get silhouettes and things like that, because, you know, like, mirroring how you feel, the big emotion, where there isn't a lot of clarity and that sort of thing. And I really enjoyed when those happened, but it only happened a couple of times. And with animation, there's, like, literally no limit to what you can show us, what you can do. And so just giving us those, like, little glimpses is really kind of what set it in. I think if it had just been, like, the flat, like, not to call it flat, the animation itself, like, that is used throughout is really beautiful and lovely and creative. But yeah, if it had just stayed that, I think I would have been less inclined to complain, because I didn't even think about, like, the opportunity of the other stuff. Because they kind of hint at it as a possibility of, like, oh shit, this animation is going to get amazing and cool and going to be all these different styles. It's going to be a clash of culture, like, that he's experiencing in his own actual life. And then, but that doesn't happen. Right. But there was such great opportunity for it. And also it could be just a limitation of, like, funds, and, like, which is totally, like, real. And it's better to, like, go for something and try rather than, like, I think I preferred that choice of, like, them still, like, trying to incorporate some of the other animation to give that extra, but they just might not have had the funds to, like, fully flesh it out. And I definitely prefer going for something rather than just not trying at all, just, like, cutting it. So yeah, that's my assessment there on on that portion of it. But, like, yeah, I absolutely love this documentary. It's amazing. It's beautiful, it's poignant, it's a story that I had not thought could happen, really. Like, we've gotten a lot of, we're hearing voices for the first time that we haven't been able to, and that's what I love so much about the medium of film and video and that sort of thing, and we have more access to people's voices for the first time, and that's incredible and important, and that's what I want more and more and more of. And I had never, like, we've gotten to hear, like, refugee stories more. We are seeing the reality of war, the reality of genocide, all of that, like, that's happening literally as I'm just, like, sitting in my bedroom making this. Like especially, like, last year, we had multiple documentaries from inside of Syria. And a world that none of us otherwise would see inside of. And I think that's awesome. And this is another unique story that needs to be seen and heard. And I want more. We need more. So let's keep lifting these films up, because it's important. We need to give more people access to it. We need to hear these voices so that we can make better change, that someone shouldn't have to hide who they are on film, like, ever. Like, I don't think, like, to, like, that's that, yeah, it's heartbreaking that you can't be who you are. It's ass. It's unacceptable. So yeah, let's keep lifting these stories up and watch Flea. Do it. You can rent it. I got lucky that I got to see it in the theater. Yeah, it's incredible. Give them money. Give them your money. Give them your money now. Do it. Great. Awesome. Okay, Flea. This the second out of five. We're two in. All right, next up. Next is the Pixar film. It's Luca. Luca. All right, cool. Let's do the synopsis first for Luca. In a beautiful seaside town on the Italian Riviera in the 1950s, two young boys enjoy an unforgettable summer of pasta, gelato, and scooter rides. Their adventures together lead to a profound appreciation of family, self-acceptance, and the transformative power of friendship. Mm. Also, they're sea monsters. I thought about not saying that at all, but it's like, it's in the trailers, y'all know, like, it's fine. But it is fun. It's like that fun extra little quirk. It's like, we're Pixar, here's a quirk. And I'm into it, I like it. Yeah, so the film was directed and written by Enrico Casarosa, and this was his first time directing, although he had been story artist on a lot of Pixar films. Like Ice Age, he was the supervisor for The Good Dinosaur, which I really enjoyed that. A lot of people don't like it very much, but I cried a bunch. And I saw a ghost at the beginning of that movie. Justin remembers, I'm sure. Justin and I went and saw it. Justin, very heavy friend of the pod. We love to see them. Yeah, there was a ghost in that theater, without a doubt. Great film. I loved it. I love The Good Dinosaur. But, you know, everybody likes their own things. He also story wrote on Coco and the greatest Pixar film of all time, which is, say it with me, Ratatouille. Ratatouille is the greatest Pixar film. It is number one. And no one will change my mind about that. Not even Remy the Rat can change my mind about Ratatouille being the best Pixar film, because it is. It is. It just is. Right? Yep. So Enrico was nominated for an Oscar before with his short film, La Luna, which was released alongside Brave. It's super cute. Highly recommend watching it. If you have Disney Plus, you can watch all the like little shorts. And it's also based in Italy. It's like, yeah, so very much his heritage. He loves it, and puts that into his work. I love it. It's gorgeous. Yeah. Casarosa was very influenced by early Miyazaki animated films, and you can see it in Luca. I wondered what the familiarity was when I was watching this film that I felt. He uses Miyazaki's like kind of style to instill nostalgia, which I obviously don't have for 1950s Italy. I do not have nostalgia for that, but he instilled that feeling still, like, in this like magical way that Miyazaki very much is able to with his films. And yeah, it's gorgeous. apparently they also kept a little clay Glooka with them as they wrote all the storyboards, which is like an element of Pixar that I really love. Like, I got to see an actual like traveling exhibit about Pixar when I was in Denver several years ago now, pandemic. And it like showcased like all their various films and the models that they would work with. This is like a thing that they often do. And they were like massive. Like, Wally was like as big as me, pretty much. Like, they're all like these gigantic models that they make too, which like makes total sense. Like, if you're creating storyboards around these like not actual people or things that you can just like physically see in the world, it makes sense to make a physical manifestation of them. I'm sure it's really helpful, but yeah, getting to see those things was a little unnerving, but also very fun. But yeah, anyway, add it to the exhibit, bring it back around. I'd love to see the Luca model. It'd be really cute. Yeah, overall, the film is really sweet. It's fantastic for kids. There was no, this is for kids. This film is for kids. I knew the audience. It's for fun, goofy people. Fun, goofy people, which are often small babies. No, it's for kids. And also, people who feel nostalgia. So, youth. Us. All of us. It's for all of us. It's nice. Yeah. I think it also does a really great job of presenting complex relationship dynamics in like a really loving and manageable, teachable way that I think is great, which I think is what Encanto was trying to do, but it got just so overshadowed by the other things going on that like they just cared so much about the magical elements and the fun, and they had so many characters that all had their own like stories, and it was a bit of an overload for me, I think, with Encanto. And then, but Luca is very pared down of a few central relationships you're looking at and characters, and that really helps. But yeah, still, I can stop, but I don't have to keep talking. Yes, I do. I always have to keep talking. Anyway, yeah, I think it's great. My next note just says, is it gay? I saw this online a lot. I saw it a lot in like film Twitter discussed, and like this film group I'm in discussed it a lot about whether the film Luca like has like homosexual or like, yeah, like queer coding. Yeah, how does it fit into like queer theory essentially? Which like I was like, maybe. I don't know. It's not blatant at all. And they don't say, they never name it. So I have a hard time being like, yeah. I'm like, I think it's a very authentic and healthy film. So yeah, like maybe, like, you know, they love each other and that's great. They're also like kids. And if Luca knew he was gay and he said it, I'd be like, cool, whatever, or, you know, or his pal whose name I forgot. What? Yeah, like, I think it would have fit easily to speak it out loud, but inherently in the film, I did not like super get that vibe. I very much felt friendship, and they could have both been gay, and they can be friends, because that's an option, right? Just because they're two boys in love doesn't mean they're romantically in love either. Like, we can have just two gay boys who love each other as friends also. Yay. We love to see it. Yeah. But, if you're queer and you love it and because you feel seen by it, then hell yeah. Do it. And that's what it is for you. And that's awesome. But yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it and I recommend it. I don't think it's like Casarosa's masterpiece. I could feel that like pretty consistently throughout the film that like it was burgeoning on something, that like this is a really lovely, fun film, but that like got to some very like lovely places, beautiful places, transformative places, but just like creeped into them a little bit. We just like scratched a little at the surface. But I think just based on it and La Luna, he is definitely a heavy hitter for the future. Of without a doubt, we are going to see this person create a masterpiece. I'm confident. I'm calling it. I am calling it now. All right. Enrico Casarosa will create a masterpiece, maybe at Pixar or wherever. But yeah, it's coming. He is bonkers talented. And I'm fucking stoked to see whatever he creates next. It's going to be awesome. Luca. Coo! On to the next one. Let's see what's next. Ooh, it's the Mitchells versus the Machines. Okay, let's again start with synopsis before I get all up in what I'm feeling. Okay. The Mitchells versus the Machines. An old school father and his plugged-in filmmaker daughter struggle to relate as their family embarks on a road trip to her new college. Their drive is interrupted by a machine apocalypse that threatens to tear the unlikely heroes apart unless they can find a way to join forces and save humanity. Hmm. Isn't that fun? Doesn't that make you want to watch it? So let's start. It was directed by Mike Rianda, who is a creative director and writer for one of the greatest animated series of our generation. Can you guess what it is? I'll give you a moment to mull it over in your mind. It should only take a moment. Anyway, the series is Gravity Falls. If you have not watched Gravity Falls, treat yourself. Do something good for you and watch it. It's so beyond. It's so good. It's incredibly good. You should watch it. Okay, we're talking about this movie now. But anyway, yeah, he's a creative director for the first season and then continued as like a consulting creative for the rest of the show. Rianda co-wrote the film with Jeff Rowe, who also worked on Gravity Falls. We are blessed, okay? The cast is beyond stacked in this film. Just, they were like, let's go. Like, I don't even know. They were like, they're just throwing out, just like, let's just think of some of the, like, the most incredible people that we could possibly even just want in general just to have in our lives. And then we put them all in this film. Let's run through a little bit. We've got Danny McBride, Maya Rudolph, who's literally just my favorite being, I think. We have Eric Andre, Olivia Colman, Oscar winner Olivia Colman, nominated again this year. And Blake Griffin is also in the cast. And most notably, the most notable star is Doug the Pug, who plays Monchi, the Mitchell's dog, and is, people think, the first dog ever in voice acting in a film. So that's very fun. It's innovative, at least in that way. Okay, cool. Mark Mothersbaugh composed the score for the film, who, if you are a fan of 80s music, you know who that is. He's the lead singer and keyboard player for Devo. So, whip it, yeah. Oh, gross. For those listening, I whipped, and it was embarrassing, and I apologize that you even had to hear. You even had to hear me whip. I do. I am sorry, everyone. Okay, the soundtrack. The movie's soundtrack incorporates songs from various artists, including Los Capencisos, Sigur Rós, Talking Heads, Grimes, Le Tigre, BTS. BTS Army, Show Up, Blow Up My Podcast, thank you, Alex Leahy, and Madion. So a full gamut of all kinds of different people. the animation was the dopest aspect, which it should be, right? In the animated category, I think it should be the dopest aspect, probably. But it's okay. The film had the benefit of coming after Into the Spider-Verse. And so, it was made by Sony. And Sony did Spider-Verse. I mentioned that earlier. So it had the benefit of being after Spider-Verse, where there was all this new technology and innovation made for Spider-Verse that now you do this little production had access to, which is dope. They integrated different animation styles all at the same time. So it's still 2D animation. They went with 2D animation to kind of still give it like the palatable, like normal. It's normal. Like, you know, the used to what we're used to seeing as an animated film, like historically, but then added extra elements. Honestly, they just weren't afraid to be weird. I guess it's like how I want to put it. They incorporate fun moments that made scenes look like a teen girl's journal, because we're following Katie, the lead, the girl going to college, and she she has moments where we just see how she's feeling, and we like literally see it on screen, like with angry faces like drawn on her family members or explosions and stuff like that. It's super fun. It's super dope. I like it a lot. Unlike Luca, but you know, that's okay. This film is blatantly gay. Okay. It's like very proudly queer. The main character, Katie, is queer. Rianda and Ro wrote Katie to be unambiguously part of the LGBTQ community in consultation with queer members of their production team, but they did not seek to make it part of the central conflict with her father, considering her sexuality normal in real life. That's what we want to see. That's what we want to see, right? I had to pull, this is like the only quote that I pull from my notes for any of this, but it was just, I really loved it, so I wanted to incorporate it. Michelle Yang of NBC News, she gave like a positive review and lauded the film for its LGBTQ+ representation, stating the film treats its protagonist's identity matter-of-factly, but with care, which is exactly how it ought to be. What a quote. So good. Yeah, and that's that fucking shit I like. Alright? That's that shit I like. So yeah, it's just... it's everything. It's such a fun film. It's a fucking rip-roaring good time. And it's fucking dope and inclusive. They're a multiracial family. I think every family that you see is multiracial, like, in some fashion. Like... Oh, it's that shit. It's just what I've been waiting for, honestly. It's just, we legit love to see it. I'd love to see it in more than just animated films, but I love fucking animation, so I'm happy. I'm happy. And that's that. Hell yeah. All right, cool. I think we're on to our last one. It's our last one. So the last film nominated in the Best Animation category is Raya and the Last Dragon. Let's give her a little summary. Lone warrior Raya searches for a legendary dragon to stop the evil force that is destroying all she holds dear. But during her journey, she learns that it's going to take trust and teamwork in addition to her individual skills to restore harmony to her fractured world. It stars Kelly Marie Tran. I wanted to see her so much after she was in Star Wars. I was like, hell yeah, I'm gonna see this woman in all the things. And then we didn't really get much of that. But I'm really happy that she's in this film. It's another Disney, obviously. If you're doing the math, this is this is the third Disney. Also, Awkwafina. I still don't know how I feel about Awkwafina. I am very I am very in the gray with Awkwafina. I am very roller coaster with most people with Awkwafina. Yeah. Isaac Wang, Gemma Chan, Daniel Dae Kim, Benedict Wong, and Sandra Oh are some of the lead cast. Yeah. The directors, who is? Oh, it's directors and writers were Don Hall, Carlos Lopez Estrada, Osnat Shirer, and Peter Del Vecchio. Yeah, the artist Fawn, this pronunciation is just very, very long, their last name. And again, I apologize if it is incorrect. It deserves to be said correctly. Fawn Verasunthorn. I think I'm right about Verasunthorn. I think it's Verasunthorn. Served as the head of story for the film, so an actual Thai artist, and it's based on traditional Southeast Asian cultures. So it's good. They had a Thai artist serve as head of story for the film. That's great. It gives us a lot more authenticity, and people should be able to tell their own stories of their own cultures, number one. But with the cast, it's very limited Southeastern Asian representation in the actual cast itself. And yeah, backlash is like a really, I think, big word, but some of the negative criticism, there we go, about it, was about like the narrative being kind of over-engineered. And yeah, an actual like quote from someone was a disheartening lack of accurate representation in the vocal cast, saying it missed the mark at its core. And also the biggest criticism, in my opinion, is that Disney Plus, which is where it's streaming, it was premium at first, where you had to pay like an extra $30 if you wanted to watch it. And then after a few months, they put it on regular Disney Plus. And it was in theaters. But my biggest criticism is that most Southeast Asian countries don't even have access to Disney Plus. That they don't even stream there. So, that's fucked. Like, that's fucked up. That sucks. That sucks so much. You're gonna monetize, you're gonna make money on this culture, but you're not even gonna give them access to it? What the fuck? It makes me feel gross, and I'm upset. And I don't like it. Yeah, so that's a big disappointment, and a pretty big slap in the face to that culture that's fucked. James Newton Howard, we can talk about music. How about James Newton Howard composed the score for Raya and the Last Dragon, his fourth score for an animated film by Walt Disney. He also did Dinosaur, Atlantis, and Treasure Planet. But this is also a criticism. I don't know why this boring fucking white man got to do the music. Like, there's complete miss the mark. Like, what? I think they took like one note of criticism from past productions of like, you should have people tell their own stories, you know, like, which is like one of my biggest criticisms of Soul and a lot of Disney. And they were like, okay, cool, here's a Thai artist will be in charge of, you know, the story. And it's like, cool. Like, that's not enough though. Like, then we need to, it's a whole, it's not a piece. This is, it's all, it's homogenous. You need to be better. But they're like, nah, but we're not gonna do that. So we're gonna have this white man still do the music, even though Southeastern music fucking bangs. Like, what? Like, There were so many artists to turn to. Like, the fuck? Like, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. It does make sense. It's just like closed-minded, boring white people shit. So great. Yeah, there's just so much potential. There's so much potential with this film. And again, yeah, it's like an improvement from the like utmost shitty cultural ineptitude that was in the past. Ugh. God, like last year, oh my god, Mulan was revolting cultural insensitivity and just actual like fucking terror. So I hate to even like give it airtime. It's fucked up. So yeah, but it's not enough. So it's not good enough, Disney. It wasn't good enough. Next time, I guess we have to just keep waiting for next time. I can get it together. Yep. So that's how I feel about that. I thought actually that it was like fun and cute. Watching it was fun and cute because I didn't do the research before I watched it about like the criticisms, and because I just like didn't inherently know the cultural background of a lot of those actors. I didn't, yeah, obviously know the cultural background of the composer either. As I was listening to it, the music was like odd and not right, which makes sense now that I know. Yeah, it's because there was no culture there. So yeah, watching it, it's like it was fun. It was so long. It felt really long and it dragged. The fight sequences were really neat. I think the animation was like pretty incredible and creative. And I enjoyed at least one of the characters. There was like a little boy, I liked him. And I didn't find Raya that likable, but I think it's part of it for part of the story. That's kind of part of it. And yep. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think I can really, like, I can't wholeheartedly endorse the film. I endorse the aspects that were good of, you know, giving people their voices in the room, in the actual storytelling. And so that's really cool. And they did put the work in for the like production design and the costuming you see, the characters themselves. It's really inclusive. Yeah, like Disney Philippines had their own rights. They got to like re-record a couple songs with like Filipino artists. One of them being like the first, we now have like the first Filipino language song ever recorded for Disney, and so that's really awesome. But yeah, still not enough. We will celebrate the people that did the damn thing correctly. We'll celebrate them, but Disney as a whole, fucking do better. Cool. Great, yay. So those are the nominees for Best Animated Feature, and I think it's pretty obvious which one is my favorite. It's definitely The Mitchells versus the Machines. Ooh, yes, ka-ka-ka. Oh my gosh. I hope it wins. But I have an inkling in my heart that, yeah, Encanto will win. But I don't know. Spider-Verse beat Zootopia, so I think it did. It might also be in my mind that I just couldn't handle it losing, and so in my mind, it's a fact that Spider-Verse won, but maybe they didn't, but I think they did. Yeah. So what do y'all tell me what you think. What should have made it and what didn't. There's only like one film, I think, that I saw last year that was like animated that I thought, like watching it, I was like, oh, this is probably a shoe-in for Best Animated Feature. It was The Summit of the Gods, which was a French animated film based on a Japanese manga of like the same title. And it's about a journalist who like finds a journal of like these mountain climbers that disappeared, and they possibly were the actual like first two people to climb Everest. And it's like him investigating and finding out, and you go like back and forth between the times and stuff. It was really cool. It was really dope. I was like, oh yeah, this like seems like something that would, I don't know, be nominated for an Oscar in some way. I thought it would probably get nominated for international feature just because Disney does dominate in animated, but it didn't. So it didn't for either. So it's on Netflix though, if you want to check it out. I do recommend it. Yeah. All right. Well, that's this episode. That's the first episode. One down. I'm gonna do at least three total. I know that one of them will be just about the best pictures like I did last year. And that one will probably be very long because there's like fucking, there's always like 11. Is it 11 or 10? Yeah. So that one will be very long, and it'll be the week before the Oscars. So, or the week of the Oscars. We'll see how it shakes out. Yeah. I don't know. Also, if you have a preference, let me know. Should I do that one earlier to give people more time? I don't know. Yeah, who's really listening just to me to make their, well, if you want to listen to me to make your ballot, maybe. But I'm pretty good. My ballots are actually a little bit accurate when the Oscars do the right thing. Which they don't often do, so never mind. My ballot's not usually very accurate. But it is if they were right. Yep, never mind. Yeah, but I don't know what the other episode is going to be about. I thought about doing acting, but so much of the acting is tied to a lot of the Best Picture nominees, so it kind of, like, it's like a blurred there, and I don't really want to do that. So maybe I'll do, I don't know, I was thinking about technical too, but Dune is nominated for everything technical, and then also, I don't know. We'll figure it out. And if you have an idea, please let me know, because I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear it. Maybe we can do music episode. That'd be pretty cool, but it's a little hard just to talk about. Here I go, dawdling with my words. Just gabbing by myself. This is what it's like. Now you have video, patrons, of watching me dawdle by myself. This is what it looks like. Isn't it spectacular? Is it better to see me do it? Or is it better just to hear me do it? I don't know. Let me know. I'd love to know. Send me, yeah, ideas, please, for that, Oscar, the next Oscar episode. I'm almost done watching them all, which has never happened to me before, but I'm pretty sure I was talking to a few people about this, of there were so few films that actually like came out that the ones I ended up seeing just had a very good likelihood of getting nominated. So I was lucky that I got to see a lot of them before nominations came out, so it wasn't hard. I didn't have as many. This is the first year I had, like, I think I only had like 30 to watch, which is super helpful going into it. And most of those are short films, so that was especially helpful. So the Oscars are on March 27th, so we've got a little time. And yeah, I think that's it. Just like glancing over my notes, make sure. Yeah, that's it. Cool. I've been your friendly neighborhood fat friend. I love you so very much. Thank you for being patient. I know it was like a couple weeks, but that's because I had to like literally like get through them all and organize my brain a little bit, and I appreciate the patience as always. Thank you for still being around and listening. I love doing this for some weird reason, and thank you for being a part of it. Yeah, what is my sign off? Oh, I love you so much that I'd traverse an epic journey through my family dynamics, metaphorically and literally, for you. All right. Okay, bye.